welcome everyone to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore, and joining me as always is Jake Barnett. We are here to do your SmackDown audio review, just like we are just about every Saturday. Past few Saturdays have been kind of up and down, but Jake and I are back, should be here together for the long run each Saturday, bringing you an audio breakdown of the WWE SmackDown show. But it's not the only audio that's produced for the site here each week. Jason Powell also does a WWE Raw review on Monday nights. Will Pruitt is sometimes joined by Ryan Kester, sometimes done by Jason Powell. Those guys will do the TNA Impact audio review, usually on Fridays for the site. Jake and Will get together every Wednesday or Thursday for the .NET Countdown. They look at the top and the bottom in professional wrestling each week. Jason Powell does a Q&A audio where members can ask both wrestling and non-wrestling questions. I jump in periodically with all kinds of audios, different interviews. I've got a WCW-themed Q&A coming up very soon for our members. So if you want to get involved with that, you need to sign up. And, of course, Jason and I get together every Thursday for our flagship show. We call it .NET Weekly. We look at all the news of the week. This week's a very long one, obviously, with everything going on with creative shakeups, WWE and Ring of Honor. Just with everything going on, the CM Punk fan altercation, lots to talk about this week. Great audio this week. And you can have access to all of that just by becoming a .NET member. Plus, you get access to our ad-free version of the site, the .NET member forum, and the .NET member blog section. So sign up to become a member. Just head on over to ProWrestling.net, click on the right-hand side of the page where it says .NET member sign-up link, and we will get you started for just $7.50 if you take the 30-day option. If you know you want to be a member for the year, $5.50 a month to take $2 off each month when you sign up for that annual option. And, Jake, now that the plug is out of the way, we're left with a SmackDown show that, when it went off the air Friday night, my initial thought was our audio in the morning is going to be like 7 minutes long, and five of that is going to be the opening member pitch because there's nothing to talk about on this show. It was, I think, and it's so funny. I think if you lay it out, you can say that WWE did all the right things to sell their upcoming pay-per-view, to sell Raw next week. That functionally everything kind of served its purpose. But could they have found a more boring way to meet those needs and desires? I thought it was just a dreadfully boring show.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, and it all started with the opening segment and how bizarre and out of place it seemed, and the show really never picked up steam from there. It was just a pretty boring affair, and we've talked about quite a bit about WWE creative already this week on the site, but you have to wonder how adding the main event show on Wednesdays, they have their overseas obligations, so they still tape Superstars and NXT is a whole different operation now, but they got 3 hours of Raw, an hour of main event, an hour of other stuff they're doing. It just seems like by the time SmackDown rolls around, it kind of gets the tail end of the creative energy. And I don't know if that'll continue to be the case, but it sure seems like SmackDown is getting the scraps when it comes to putting together interesting stories, and it's kind of a shame.
Yeah, and like I said, it's really weird to because I wanted to hate on things, but then as I would hate on them, I was thinking, well, but it did do this for that opening segment, for example. I mean, from a what they did standpoint, show looked like a badass with having the higher strike strength, and we kind of snapped and gotten in Sheamus's face to walk off looking like a total badass, which is good for the pay per view. You had the Kofi Kingston Miz moment where Miz cuts the promo on him to set up for Raw. That was, that makes sense. Or excuse me, for main event next week. That makes sense. That was, they did what they were supposed to do there. The Sin Cara and Damian Sandow match was set up for the tag match on Monday on Raw. They did what they were supposed to do there. I didn't care. It was just the strangest show. Because you're going through and it's like, well, we can check that off the list. We can check that off the list. We can check that off the list. And they hit everything on the checklist that they should have done. It wasn't interesting in any way. And probably I will say everything was like that because there was one moment on the show that really had me confused. why are you jobbing out Daniel Bryan like that to Alberto Del Rio? I mean, that's usually we go to the show in order, but we try to pull out the big stuff on the front end. And this one, I wasn't necessarily upset about it, but when it was over, I was just sitting there going, what did that solve? And I don't want to sound like a hypocrite, because you and I both have been screaming for a while that what made Del Rio, compelling on the front end was he got legitimate wins. He looked like a total badass. He would beat guys and beat them cleanly and beat them, badly in the middle of the ring. And then they lost their way with him. And it's like, well, the only way you get that back, if you want Del Rio to succeed, you've got to give him those wins again. Okay, yeah, I understand, but your tag champion that you're really, whether you like it or not, they got a big program built around Daniel Bryan and Kane, and they have the interaction in the first part of the show, and then Bryan goes out there, and yes, he told Kane not to come out and all that. But then he just jobs out to Del Rio clean in the middle of the ring. I was really shocked by that.
Yeah, it did surprise me a bit. I read a couple of different, reports that had been sent in about the SmackDown tapings, and one of them said something about Ricardo helping Del Rio towards the end of the match, and that was led to the finish, but it didn't look like that at all to me. So, it was an interesting choice, and I guess maybe they're trying to move the Kane and Bryan storyline forward in the sense that trying to show that they do need each other and, stuff like that, where, they've been kind of two singles competitors that have been fighting over who is the tag team champions thus far. I don't know. Maybe they're trying to push them closer together as a team by showing that they are better together, blah, blah, blah. I mean, they could do that with these types of competitive matches where, they both, take close losses when they're not together or whatever. I mean, that could be what they're doing. Otherwise, it makes no sense. I mean, I guess it depends on how quickly they plan on moving Bryan back into the, in the main event scene. But he's definitely hot right now, and it seems kind of odd to take that steam off of him when they need him to carry one of their marquee matches at the pay-per-view.
And, they're working this angle where they've got something planned, obviously, because they keep referring to Daniel Bryan. People are accusing him of being the weak link. The only reason, Del Rio says the only reason you're the champion is because of Kane. And they're obviously working in all of that, but it was, to me, that match was kind of the perfect punctuation to the sentence that was said throughout the show, which is WWE needs some damn development, some enhancement talent. They need guys because you've got, Damian Sandow and Sin Cara out there. Neither guy, facing each other, neither guy needs to take a loss. They both need a win. They both need to look strong going into Monday's tag team final tournament between, with Sin Cara and Ray versus Cody and Damian Sandow. Big Show versus Kofi, two guys who both need a win. Neither one needs to take a loss. They're out there facing each other. Kane versus Dolph Ziggler, two guys who, Kane's whatever, to some degree, and just like with Daniel Bryan, you can get around logically to give him the loss, but Ziggler doesn't need to take the loss. Kane doesn't need to look weak, especially if they're going to do this Daniel Bryan is the weak link thing. So, but you've got them out there facing each other. So it's clear that, they need enhancement talent. They need guys who are just, going to be the bottom of the roster and stop moving them around. Let them be jobbers for a while if that's how you feel like they've got to cut their teeth. I mean, obviously, I disagree. I would find guys who are never going to make it and ask them to be your enhancement talent, but WWE doesn't seem interested in doing that. So just tell a guy, hey, this is what we're going to use you for a while. This is how we bring people up to the system. Everybody builds out of this. And decide that's your plan, but they need enhancement talent. They've got to stop putting stars who need wins against each other.
Yeah, I mean, it also kind of flows into just the failure of WWE to build a consistent mid and lower card. I mean, you have, I guess, they're starting to try to do some of that stuff now with the band and some other things they're doing, but I mean, it really does seem like there's a huge chasm between, the top of the card and then guys who just appear on TV frequently and usually just to take losses. So, I mean, if we had, if you had personalities and characters that could benefit from being competitive in the ring, even if they do take a loss from you know, from one of the major stars. That would be better than what they're doing now. It does seem like there's just a lack of anybody in a position to be called a mid-carder or just a lower-card guy, because they just don't have the creative time to build them up as anything. And I think that's even reflected at the top of the card. They have a lot of characters that just aren't very mature, and especially compared to what they were able to accomplish during, like, the Attitude Era or something similar.
Yeah, it's, like I said, it's, you know, actually, if you go through the show from start to finish, they hit all their check marks. They hit all their spots that they have to hit. It's just was not an exciting show. But we'll go through it from start to finish here and see if anything jumped out at us at all. This was, again, the SmackDown that aired on October the 12th, 2012. It was taped on the 9th in San Jose, California. Opening video, Pyro, Josh Matthews, and JBL on commentary this week. No Michael Cole. Booker T comes out of the stage and talks about the KO punch and the bro kick. Booker says that, you know, both men feel that their move is the most powerful, so they were going to find out right now. And it was at that moment that I see the punching bag hanging behind him, connected to the machine. Oh, God, no. It's the strike thing they did every year for NXT for the guys, where they had to punch the punching bag and see who could punch the strongest. Yes, that's what we're going to get, the punch versus the bro kick on the punching bag video game thing. Big Show and Sheamus both make entrances out onto the stage. They kind of got chesty in each other's face. Booker T steps in between them, pushes them apart, says that tonight's all about them, but he wanted them to take all their animosity and hit that machine. He said that, my cable had a little break, so I'm not exactly sure what he said right after that, but when my cable came back, Booker said that Big Show could go first. Show said he wasn't going to do it. He snatched the mic away and said, you know, if you want to know how powerful my punch is, ask Triple H, ask Randy Orton, ask Shawn Michaels, ask Undertaker. He started naming all the people that he had knocked out with it. He said, ask them how powerful it is. Sheamus grabbed the mic that was nearby and said that Big Show didn't want to do it. He was game. He lined up, pounded on his chest, hit the bro kick on the punching bag. And I got to say, I was kind of impressed. He had great aim with it. And, I mean, it looked legitimate when he kicked it, and it went in pretty fast. So kudos to him for that. He scored a 1,322 pounds per square inch, which as I put in my report, is a fake number for two reasons. One, if you're measuring force, it's just pounds per square inch, means you're measuring pressure and not force. So it should have just been in pounds. And two, you know, heavyweight boxers throw punches at 1,100 pounds per square inch. I mean, that's a serious punch, 1,100 pounds. This guy's kicking at 1,322. No, it's not happening. Show said he's still not doing it. You know, everybody applauded Sheamus's number. Show said he's still not doing it. He's not being a part of it. You know, it's going to blow up. It's not going to go up. It's going to start smoking something. You know, he's going to be made to look stupid. That's what Booker wanted to do, was make him look dumb. Sheamus starts, you know, punking him at that point, saying, you know, if you're too scared or whatever, and he's going through the whole thing, and Show finally just snaps, turns around, and I thought what he did looked very cool, much like Sheamus's kick looked very cool. Show's punch there, the way he stretched out and threw, looked very cool. He punched the bag flies up, and it scores 1,809 pounds of pressure per square inch. Big Show gets in Sheamus's face and says, I guess I'll see you at Hell in a Cell, fella, and walks off. Very cool. You know, very cool end to that, even though the beginning of it wasn't very good. And then Booker T starts to interview Sheamus, and all Sheamus can do is put over Big Show before he get any farther. Tensai comes out and attacks him, and we go straight to commercial. You know, I'm not a fan of this gimmick. Like I said, I appreciate the athleticism of Sheamus and being able to make that kick look legitimate when he hit the bag. And I thought that Big Show's punch looked like a real punch. Part of my problem with the WMD, the way he does it now, is he just kind of stands there flat-footed and just throws his arm. And it's like, yeah, you know, whereas this one, he turned on his leg and you know, threw a haymaker. So I liked the visual part of that. But other than that, from the very beginning and through the end, my thought was, this is how they're selling a World Heavyweight Championship match, by having him out there with the punching bag machine that you and your friends, you know, get drunk at the beach and bet on who can punch the bag harder. This is their world title feud, Jake?
Yeah, it certainly is. You kind of knew what was up when they had no cables running from the punching bag machine over to the computers with the monitor on the table. It's just like a freestanding speed bag, you know. There's no force meter going on there. But yeah, I mean, it was you know, if you were a young kid, I'm sure that segment was probably really cool to you. But I mean, immediately, if you have, you know, if you're an adult watching this show, you're like, oh, this is a fraud. Like right from the start, there's nothing interesting about it. I mean, and they continue to do, you know, the Sheamus character where he's just completely overconfident and you know, does not seem to be taking things seriously. And yeah, I don't know. I just don't enjoy you know, that part of Sheamus' act. But I think Big Show has been pretty good here. You know, I've actually thought he's been, you know, carrying his weight and doing a pretty good job of carrying this feud thus far. But they continue to put them in more ridiculous situations each week, and this is just the next step. I didn't really think it was that interesting. I thought they could have done a lot more useful things with their time.
And then, we get this attack from Tensai, and it's so bizarre. He hit Sheamus one time, knocks him down. Booker T chases him off. We come back from commercial. Sheamus is standing in the ring, and Tensai gets an entrance. really? We're going to stop and reset and pop an entrance here? I mean, that just was kind of weird to me. But he came out to the ring for our first match of the night, Sheamus defeating Tensai in 3 minutes and 33 seconds. Every guy kind of got in their offense. Tensai hit a couple of moves. Sheamus hit a couple of moves, and they settled into this. You know, one guy would hit a power move and then miss the next move, and then the other guy would hit a power move and then miss the next move. So they kind of settled into that for about a minute, and then finally Sheamus hit White Noise and set up and called for the bro kick and hit it for the win. He celebrated with the fans. I mean, look, the guy is way over. There's no question about that, Jake, but like you said, he's just not a very believable character. He's probably the closest guy we've had to John Cena in the sense of the character in some time, wouldn't you think? I mean, he's very much like Cena in not taking things seriously, being a little bit goofy, and being a total badass in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, I like Sheamus in the ring. I think he's a great, in-ring performer. I just don't particularly like the whole, you know, Lucky Charms kind of, it's just kind of a character that's geared towards a younger audience, and it just doesn't resonate with me. So,
when I say badass, I mean like the Super Cena character. I mean, he's the guy that just comes right back and then, you know, just kills people.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, he's definitely booked in a similar way. I don't necessarily even disagree with, you know, with Sheamus having, you know, that kind of talent in the ring. I mean, I can see, you know, him being compared to Cena just because he is, you know, such a well-rounded in-ring performer, and he does have similar, you know, comebacks, and, he does take a beating and seems to absorb beatings on a regular basis that other people would probably not, you know, come back from. And I mean, I understand the whole babyface routine, you know, that WWE favors, and that works for Cena, and it also works for Sheamus, and they get good reactions in the ring with their comebacks and whatnot. But it's also similar to Cena in that the character is just not geared towards me, and I don't like the humor. I don't find it particularly funny. You know, I wish we'd get something more serious out of him. In fact, when he was more serious in the past, I enjoyed him a lot more, and the same could be said for Cena. So, they're both kind of in the same boat, and I kind of wish for the same things for both of them. I don't think they're necessarily, incapable of doing very interesting things on the microphone in those characters. I just think they're written so poorly that it just comes across as ham-fisted a lot of the time.
Just because of what you said just kind of had a question pop to mind. I'll track just a little bit here, but just to kind of your quick thoughts on something. Do you think it's possible that WWE could put together a hybrid show, if you will, for want of a better term, insofar as, obviously we're not going to see PG and Attitude Era stuff in the same show. That's not what I mean. But like you said, there are characters like Cena, like Sheamus, who are crazy, crazy, crazy over. And it's what I tell the Cena haters all the time is, don't discount how just insanely over he is with kids, especially. It's every kid I run into, little kid at a wrestling, at an indie show, or who's your favorite wrestler? John Cena, John Cena, John Cena. Every single time. And they'll be sitting there watching you know, indie wrestling with their John Cena doll in their lap while wearing their John Cena hat and John Cena wristbands and John Cena t-shirt. It's absurd. But, and so you don't, obviously you don't want to get rid of that if you're WWE, but do you think it's possible that you could do both? Could you have, you know, John Cena there doing his thing and serious characters like CM Punk, but more of them sprinkled throughout the card as well? Do you think that's possible, or does everybody have to be watered down just by the nature of the fact that your top guys are watered down?
I don't necessarily think so. I mean, you know, I don't know if you can, you know, keep them on separate shows, but, you know, they've done very successful, you know, more mature storylines, you know, in the era of Cena being kind of the PG, the leader that he is of the show. You know, in 2008, you know, they had Cena holding the world title, and then you also had Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho. You know, with Jericho, you know, punching Michaels' wife, and you know, they were doing all kinds of really intense stuff with that storyline, and they coexisted on the same show. So I mean, I think it is possible. I don't know if you want to call it a hybrid show, but I mean, they will need to find a way to have storylines on their broadcast that kind of branch out and reach out to different audiences. But it seems like lately they've, you know, everything has kind of gotten diluted, you know, with how much both, you know, Sheamus being the World Heavyweight Champion and, you know, Cena still being the marquee character despite CM Punk being the World WWE Champion. You know, it seems like the two leaders of each broadcast end up kind of being watered down. It's unfortunate because it kind of permeates throughout the entire show.
Yeah, I keep waiting for that change that CM Punk keeps talking about and talks about in great detail in his new DVD. And oh, if you haven't seen the DVD, very good, check it out. I was just curious. I wonder how much they can mix things together. You pointed out a perfect time there with Michaels and Jericho and how intense and adult their storyline was. Adult without being, you know, without not being PG. I think it can succeed. I wonder how many people, I mean, how many of those writers are stuck in the rut that Jason talked about where you're writing for the audience of one, you know, where you're writing for Vince McMahon and you write cornball comedy and those sorts of things because that's what Vince McMahon likes. And so we're not seeing good, you know, great ideas possibly that are sitting out there in one of these writers' minds because they're so busy trying to write for what they think Vince McMahon wants. This shakeup to me in creative is going to be interesting just to see if anything changes, because I honestly don't think there will be any change. I don't think we'll see a difference whatsoever. We might for a couple of weeks as Vince, you know, digs in with his hands deeper, but then I think things settle right back out very quickly after that. So we'll keep an eye on it and see. We get a video recap of Del Rio attacking Randy Orton after SmackDown went off the air 2 weeks ago, and then the announced team showed Orton's tweet where he said he was going to come back at that show. Backstage, Ricardo Rodriguez was walking around Del Rio's locker room looking nervous. Del Rio asked him what the problem was. He said, "Are you looking for Orton?" And Ricardo said, "Yes." And he said, it doesn't matter if he shows up. Look at what I did to him 2 weeks ago. I handled him just fine last time. But since you're so worried about him, why don't you go find him?" And Ricardo was, no, that's okay. And Del Rio said, "No, go find him." And sent Ricardo out to go find Randy Orton. And after commercial, we get what was the beginning of a long night of me disliking Ricardo Rodriguez, which is a shame because I've always kind of liked his act. His gimmick's always kind of been funny for me. But he's backstage looking very nervous, looking for Randy Orton. He hears a hissing sound, and I think any mouth-breathing, window-licking moron within 500 miles knew exactly who it was going to be, just the beginning of the hissing sounds. But they play it out a few more times anyway with Ricardo getting really, really, really scared as the hissing sound gets closer, and then bam, the Cobra pops in the frame, almost strikes him in the face. There's Santino holding his own arm back from because he can't control it himself. This is my favorite story in all of WWE, as you can tell from the tone of my voice. Santino puts over the Cobra, you know, was a dangerous snake. It's the Cobra, but you're looking for another even more dangerous snake, some say, the Viper, and really laid it on thick and even had the Cobra strike Ricardo a little bit in the arm and then said, calm down, we have to go work in the ring. This really made me mad, Jake, because I like Santino's comedy most of the time. If it's away from the ring, I find him funny, and I find Ricardo Rodriguez funny. Two guys that I find funny stunk up my television. I hated this segment, and it didn't click to me at the time, but now knowing on the, you know, on the back end of it that this was the first of a number of stupid segments, really, why? What is, I mean, this is what I'm talking about. They write cornball comedy because they think that's what Vince wants.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell right away, you know, like you said, by the stupid hissing, exactly what we were about to see. But I thought it would have been funny if it actually was Orton that was making that noise, just because it would have been so out of character for him. You know, that would have actually made me laugh. But what we got was just unfortunate, you know, sticky camp comedy. You know, and you know, the comedy on WWE shows is really only funny when, you know, it's natural and it kind of plays off of some, you know, maybe perhaps, you know, reality-based dig on somebody. I mean, that's generally pretty funny when they're able to do something somewhat natural. But when you can tell they're really trying to craft something funny, I just don't think it works, because I really think the performers oftentimes are funnier than creative. And so, you know, when something is funny, it's almost entirely because they made it funny and not necessarily because it was written that way. And this is one of those things where it seemed like they had just had a bad segment written and nobody was able to kind of break through, you know, the bad writing and make it funnier than it was, because it was just a stinker, like you said.
Yeah, if you want to see the talent trying to be funny, go back to the WWE main event from Wednesday night. I don't remember the exact line, but The Miz calls Kofi, you know, a something-something reject. I don't even remember. He said something about dreadlocks. I can't remember exactly what it was. He makes some sort of jokes about dreadlocks. And Kofi almost legit loses it. Like, you see him just grinning and trying to keep it under control. And Miz plays it off. He goes, "Don't smile at me." And Kofi goes, "That's what you came up with." And Miz goes, "Yeah, that's what I came up with." I mean, that's funny. You know, they were out there doing this thing. This was just, you know, the Cobra gimmick, when, you know, he was hitting the move and then he would put the sock on, I was fine. I was okay with that. But the minute he lost control of one of his appendages, I can't deal with that. That, to me, that's everything I hated about the WWF back in the 80s, is that just cartoony garbage. And I can't stand when stuff like that. And I realize it may just be me, this viewer, but that's what I'm here to do, is give my opinion. And speaking of my opinion, next we get what was, you know, again, kind of the theme of the night for me. It's good but sucks all at the same time. We have Heath Slater, Drew McIntyre, and Jinder Mahal making their entrance. They're all using Heath Slater's music now. And they told us that they are now the band, that individually their careers, and they were solo, their careers were out of tune, as Jinder Mahal put it. And then Heath Slater grabs the mic and goes, "But now we're a band! Woo!" And I instantly hated his character twice as much as I did before. I think Heath Slater's a good talent in the ring. I despise his character and his mic work, and this was even worse. And then, just when I'm like, well, okay, I can get past Slater's character, I like these three guys, I'm happy that they're together, Jake, they started playing air guitar, and I picked up the remote. Like, I pointed at the television, and I thought about it long and hard as they went into commercial about just hitting the power button, because that, really, air guitar, the band, are you kidding me?
Yeah, not only air guitar, but coordinated air guitar.
Oh, yeah.
They all tried to do the same moves. It was actually cool. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they're going just to be mocked and laughed at because they think it gets heat. Like, but if anything, it's just going to get go away. People are going to go,
right,
"Oh, these guys again. This is stupid." You know, and Slater on the microphone, I've just never gotten it. I don't know what people see in it. I don't know if it's even necessarily that it's just not meant for me, but it's just not good. He's just not interesting, and it's just repetitive. And I think McIntyre and Mahal, you know, we both had high hopes for them at various times too. It just, you know, it seems really bizarre that you get these three guys together, and of all people, Slater would be the leader, and they would all be playing air guitar because they want to be part of his band. You know, it's like, he does not exude leadership or charisma at all. Like, you know, if anything, I would think McIntyre would snap these two, and, you know, the other two in line, and try to get them, you know, on the right path or something.
When you, I mean, just take Jinder Mahal. You talk about the absurdity of these three guys being put together in this gimmick. And like I said, Heath Slater being the leader. Jinder Mahal, 4 weeks ago, was putting his hat in a box to protect it from the masses. Today, he's playing air guitar in a synchronized gimmick with two other guys. I mean, come on.
Yeah, while still wearing the robe and, and his
hat. The turban, yeah. Yeah.
It just looked utterly ridiculous. And McIntyre, the poor guy's uncoordinated. So, he's got that typical white guy rhythm playing the air guitar. Just stiff as all get out. It was just bad.
Yeah, McIntyre's coordinated in the ring when it comes to wrestling, but apparently dancing and playing air guitar, not so much high on his skill set. So maybe that's why Tiffany beat him up. But that's a commercial. We got our second match of the night. Heath Slater and Jinder Mahal defeating Santino Marella and Zack Ryder at 3 minutes and 47 seconds. Santino plays the babyface in danger here, in peril here. He gets the hot tag to Ryder, who starts working on Slater, even hits the Broski boot. He covers in that point. Everybody gets involved. You even get Drew McIntyre taking a shot at Zack Ryder, at Ryder, but he doesn't touch him. Ryder swings back, and McIntyre drops back down, but that allows Slater to grab him and hit his, what is it? It's like a stunner. It looks like he's going to do a snapmare, but then he drives the person's face headfirst into the mat. I'm terrified at what the name of that thing is going to be when they come up with it. But it's like a stunner, broken snapmare sort of move. It takes a little too long to set up, especially if you're going to do it like this sort of thing off of a surprise. You turn around and he grabs him. It's just too much of a setup for that to be a surprise move. But nevertheless, Slater, Mahal, and McIntyre celebrating again with more synchronized air guitar in the ring. I think we said all we needed to say about the band. Is there anything you want to add about the match?
Yeah, it was actually, pretty decent as far as the action went. I mean, Ryder is competent, and so is Slater in the ring. So, you would expect them to do pretty well, and I thought they did. But just the band gimmick is not attracting interest. You could tell by the absolute lack of reaction after the match was over that it was going nowhere fast.
Yeah, they're getting heat, like you said, but I think it's a go-home heat. I mean, they had a pretty good booze right when they came out, but then I think people were like, I don't even care. I don't even care enough to boo anymore, so to leave. So I don't think it's going to work well. I mean, I wish them luck and success, because, again, I like all three guys as long as Slater stays mute. But I like Mahal and I like McIntyre. I really like Jinder Mahal. I'm still very high on him from when he started. He was the only guy that ever made Great Khali interesting to me. I'm high on this guy. I wish him success. I just don't think it's a very good gimmick to be stuck in. We get a video that shows Daniel Bryan and Kane, their match from Raw, where they both beat up Ziggler after Punk left. And then we get a tout from Ziggler where he challenges Kane to a match. Kane made his ring entrance before we went into the commercial break. I got to say, I like the use of the tout. I mean, I kind of thought we might get this at some point, and this is the first one I remember seeing. We may have had it before, I just don't remember it. But where a superstar challenged another one via tout, this just is the natural extension of this. You got 15 seconds, that's plenty of time in wrestling to call somebody a punk and call them out for a match on the next show. I'm surprised they're not doing more of this, and I'm happy that Ziggler did it, because here's a guy who needs to look a little less wormy going forward.
Yeah, I actually thought the tout thing worked out pretty well. And, like you said, for a quick challenge, 15 seconds is plenty of time. And, it's something that they can, they can air, just immediately prior to the match starting to kind of give it some foundation, whereas you just don't feel like this is just randomly thrown together.
Yeah, and again, if you're wanting to drive people to go to the tout site to use the app, having guys challenge another guy on the video is a smart way to drive fans to check it out. That's commercial. Vicky does her introduction for Dolph, and that leads to our third match of the night. Kane defeating, that's Dolph Ziggler. I don't know why it says Soft Ziggler, but Dolph Ziggler by disqualification at 10 minutes and 6 seconds. DQ finish on this, and I just said that Ziggler's a guy that needs to look less wormy. And they didn't do it here. He uses the briefcase, he hits Kane with it. In a really strange order of events, he catches Kane going up to the top rope. Vicky distracts the ref. He runs over, grabs the briefcase. Then Kane jumps off the top rope. He hits him with the briefcase. But the ref still sees it anyway. So that seemed like a whole lot of work to get from, you know, Kane on the top rope to Kane getting hit with the briefcase. And then Ziggler turns right around and takes another punch from Kane and gets swept from the ring anyway. So he didn't look very good even in defeat. Usually, you know, you take the DQ finish and your guy looks, so neither guy loses anything. But Ziggler still looked like, you know, the Punk when it was all over. He still got knocked out, and then Daniel Bryan slides in the ring. So, you know, again, a good match, a good technical match from them. Kane and Ziggler can work. We've talked many times about how you put Kane in there with the right guy. He looks like a gazillion dollars. Ziggler always looks like a gazillion dollars most of the time. So all the elements were there, but again, just kind of boring. I just didn't care, and then Ziggler looked bad at the end. So, you know, not a great ending overall to what was a pretty good match.
Yeah, I mean, it was a solid match. I think they had done pretty much all of these various spots that, you know, they put together here in the tag matches that they'd had, over the last couple of weeks. So I think it just kind of felt stale in that regard because I think we'd seen most of this before. But, they work well together. And, Kane and Ziggler have been on their game recently. Both, Ziggler's been great for a long time. But, you know, Kane more recently since being involved with Bryan has, kind of stepped up his game in the ring and been really good and delivered. So, you know, I'm happy that they had a good match, and I enjoyed it. But, like you said, the finish just kind of left you going, okay. You know, just, I guess that's over. You know, there wasn't really a whole lot of impact to it at all.
Yeah, I mean, it was not the good roller coaster ride. At the beginning of the match, I'm like, hell yeah, Ziggler called him out. Good for him. Way to show some, you know, that's awesome. That's what this character needs, is to show some fun. Oh, we got knocked the hell out again. Okay, it's the same guy. So, yeah, to me, if you're going to have him call somebody out and then, you know, get beat up like that, you make him look even more foolish than if he hadn't called him out. So Daniel Bryan runs out, though, at the end and helps chase Ziggler off, which leads to he and Kane getting in each other's face. Bryan goes, I was out here to save you. Kane said, I was doing fine. Matt Stryker steps into the ring, breaks him up, and says, gentlemen, will you at least agree that this bickering is what's going to lead to you losing the title? They stopped yelling at each other and looked at him and then, you know, kind of took a step back to regroup. Stryker looked at Bryan and said, there are people that are saying you're the weak link. And I misunderstood the question, apparently, because I thought he said some were saying Kane. But what he said was some were saying that Kane's the only reason, you know, or Kane's the reason why you're champion. What do you have to say about that? So he asked Bryan about being the weak link and that people were saying this. I don't know who's saying this, but people, whoever they are. I don't know if you mean People Magazine or just random persons, but neither one I have heard. But Bryan is the weak link. Bryan doesn't respond verbally, he responds physically. He puts Stryker in the no lock. Kane's screaming at him to stop. He gets Bryan away, pushes him in the corner, yells no at him to calm down. Goes over, helps Stryker up to his feet, stands there for a minute, can't help himself, grabs Stryker by the throat. Bryan's yelling no at him. Kane picks him up, chokeslams Stryker, and leaves him laid out in the middle of the ring. Where are they going with this? They had Kane beating up Josh Matthews for a while, and Matthews made a big deal about it, and then that just kind of went away. And Matthews didn't seem overly upset after watching Stryker get beat up last night. You would think his post-traumatic stress disorder would kick in from his beating. So what are they trying to accomplish here? Was it just an opportunity to get the two guys together in the ring, and Matt Stryker had to be the sacrificial goat? Is that what this was?
That's what it appeared like to me. I mean, it didn't appear to have any bearing on any ongoing stories aside from, you know, trying to plant seeds about, more conflict between Bryan and Kane about Bryan being the weakest link and he's going to cause him the title. And, you know, I guess that's going to be the MO going forward, is Bryan trying to overcompensate for being the weakest link in the team, if that's what you want to call it. And that's okay. I mean, they have to find a way to make this more interesting, since the anger management stuff appears to be kind of fading away, more or less. I was really optimistic about the tag tournament as well, but now it really appears like we're going to have the two non-teams fighting for, the title shot. So, I don't know. It seems like this is kind of heading for an abrupt close here. I don't know who's going to take the titles off of Bryan and Kane, but it seems like it's kind of finally, they're kind of pumping the brakes on it. It's kind of losing steam.
I don't know what's going to happen. It's not very clear at this point, and again, I think a lot of people, I know I've lost interest in the story because it's just, it's silly, and then, you know, they're trying to kind of add this semi-serious element to it while still being silly. To me, it doesn't work. I don't know, but what certainly didn't work for me at all was Ricardo and Silly Comedy Part 2. He's backstage looking for Orton. He begins to hear Orton speaking in an obviously recorded voice at a very low quality, assumes that it's still Randy Orton, slams the door open. I'm not really sure what he was going to do if it had been Orton on the other side of the door, but of course it wasn't. It was Hornswoggle, who was playing with a doll, because, you know, everybody thinks he's a friggin' kid when he's like 34 years old or something like that. And he's got the Randy Orton, what do they call him, brawling buddy instead that makes noise. You press it, and Orton says a couple of different catchphrases. Ricardo takes it from him, says something in Spanish, beats up the doll, and storms off. Again, Ricardo Rodriguez and Hornswoggle, two comedy characters not able to actually produce any actual comedy.
Yeah, I guess the comedy troupe's goal tonight was to sell merch. You know, you got to sell those Cobra socks and Brawling Buddies, and I don't know. It seems like they're plugging merch, and it wasn't funny. So that was about as far as it got with me.
So frustrating. After commercial, Lillian Garcia, in a very nice moment, welcomes all the breast cancer survivors who were there in attendance that evening. And of course, WWE is still supporting the Susan G. Komen Foundation through the end of the month. Proceeds of various items that are sold at WWEshop.com going to the Susan G. Komen Foundation. Not generally a guy that plugs, you know, somebody else's stuff like that, but, you know, in this case, if there's something you want from WWE.com that fits into that category, consider buying it now. It's a really worthy call, the Komen Foundation. Miz joined the commentary team after that, and Matthew sent up a video clip that showed Miz, Kofi, and Larry King from Monday night. Kofi Kingston made his entrance. Josh Matthews again pointed out that Kofi had challenged Miz to a title match. The Intercontinental Championship will be on the line next Wednesday night on Main Event. I will be covering that show live, so be sure to join me for that. Big Show was out next for our fourth match of the night, and Big Show defeating Kofi Kingston at 2 minutes and 11 seconds. You know, show starts out of control, Kofi makes his big comeback, hits his pendulum kick in the corner, and the boom drop, sets up for Trouble in Paradise, actually hits it, but Big Show just swats it away like a gnat was flying at him, and then hits him with a WMD for the finish. Way to make Kofi's finisher look like, you know, if Kofi ever has to face Big Show again, there's just no way he's going to win, because, I mean, all he's got to do, Big Show just got to do is just swat the guy's finisher away. That's pretty good, right, Jake?
Yeah, it was wonderfully effective in making Kofi look completely emasculated. I guess you brought this up earlier, but enhancement talent would have made a lot more sense here. You know, it took a lot off of Kofi. You know, obviously they had the Miz on commentary, but you know, they want to make Big Show look like a monster, and the only way you can do that is to have him completely victimize somebody. And in this case, you know, he victimizes the guy you're trying to build up for an Intercontinental title match next week, and it really does make it seem really questionable when they do things like that. I don't know. Maybe they're just thinking our memories are so short that we won't care come next Wednesday, but it sure didn't make Kofi look all that good.
I'm sure we'll probably get a replay of it before the match next Wednesday. I think WWE's problem a lot of times is they try to do too much at one time. You know, here they're trying to do two stories at the same time. They want to make Show continue to look like a badass, which makes perfect sense to me. And they want to put heat on Kofi and Miz, which makes perfect sense to me. I appreciate both things here. And again, you can check off both. They made Joe look like a badass. And then Miz goes on to cut a promo, which we'll talk about here in a second, which puts heat on their feud. So check, check. They did both things. But in the process, they sacrificed Kofi Kingston. And I don't think they think about that. I don't think it clicks to them that that's what they're doing. Because again, Miz gets in the ring, he cuts a promo, he squats down, you know, Kofi's just completely knocked out, the trainers are in there checking on him. Miz squats down over top of him and says, you know, this is just like every other time in your life when you're really close, about to reach out and succeed, but it's taken away from you at the last second. probably a shoot comment based on, I know, the frustration we've all had trying to watch Kofi break out as a single star in WWE's continued resistance for reasons none of us will ever understand. But he said that he's getting ready. Miz went on to say that he's leaving with his head held high and the Intercontinental Championship just like he would Wednesday night at main event. And again, when the commercial after that, they did what they were supposed to do, but they sacrificed Kofi in the Kofi Kingston in the process. And I don't understand why, because I think Kofi actually has a chance of winning that title on Wednesday. Do you feel like they're going to put the title on Kofi again next week?
Well, it does seem like he has a legitimate shot at it, and the way they've been building it up, they. Other than what we saw tonight, they've really actually been getting behind Kofi. So I assume that he would, it would be either at the main event or maybe they would try to get a pay-per-view match out of it. A pay-per-view rematch if the Miz DQs himself or whatever, however route they go. But I'm assuming we'll see the title move on to Kofi at some point, which made this even more bizarre to me. I understand, where they want to go with Big Show, and, if that was anybody else in the ring, this whole thing would have made perfect sense, but it really did feel like, Kofi had the rug pulled out from under him once again, for reasons that nobody really can probably even tell you why they put him in a position to fail like that.
Yeah, and I think they will move the title Wednesday. I think it makes good business sense because you move that title in the third week on main event, you've said, this show is must-see. We'll move a title on the show and not just the Divas Championship or the tag titles. We'll move the Intercontinental Championship, which, granted, doesn't mean what it used to and doesn't mean what it should, but it's still the Intercontinental Championship, and I think it makes good business sense to do it. And you can have the rematch of the pay-per-view that I think people will pay to see, especially if Kofi goes over kind of a last-second thing. Not a fluky win, per se, but... It's very nail-biting. If they have a great match, I think they can really establish main event as must-see TV. So it makes good business sense. I we'll see what they do with it on Monday on Raw, too, to help set it up some more. Maybe that will give us a better indication of what they're going to do. But I don't feel like this helped the feud in a significant way. It allowed Miz to cut the promo, which puts more, wormy heat on him, but the guy hasn't won one non-title match on television since winning the championship. So it's not like, he needs any more wormy heat. He's pretty much got that shtick established. But after commercial, Ricardo comes into Del Rio's locker room again, tells him he can't find Orton anywhere. He turns around and sees a shadow on the wall and jumps and hides, but it ends up being Daniel Bryan who just walks in and not Randy Orton. Bryan and Del Rio trade insults with each other. Del Rio says, calls him the weak link, says the only reason that you're still champion is because of Kane. Bryan says, well, I just left Booker T's office, and he said that you and I have a match together tonight, and oh yeah, I'm the tag team champion, and walked off. It's cool how they got there, I guess, in the sense of, this is probably the one promo that I enjoyed the most out of the whole show. I was just going to gloss over it, but both those guys I thought were pretty good here. I wouldn't mind seeing this as a legitimate feat.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I actually do like Del Rio quite a bit when they don't completely rob him of, his masculinity by having him lose every week for it felt like damn near 10 months where the guy just could not get a win to save his life. But Bryan has been excellent. I do like him in more serious roles, but I think he's really shown that he has a range and can do something legitimately funny, if given a good storyline. So, I think this would be great if they can revisit it in a few months when Bryan can shake off this, the comedy act that he's been doing and kind of get back to more serious stuff. And, it seems like he's just ready-made for a babyface turn at some point. The crowd wants to turn him every time he's out there. So I could see Bryan as the grizzled, tough babyface taking on tough heel opponents. I kind of actually like that potential possibility. But who knows where they're going with this or how long he's going to be in the tag division. But he seems like he's ready-made for another breakout whenever they want him to.
He has exceeded expectations for me in WWE. I did not think that he had the charisma and the mic skills to succeed in WWE, and I gladly eat crow and say I was dead wrong about Daniel Bryan. We cut to a different part of backstage, Booker T's office. Layla, Caitlin, Teddy Long, and Booker T are all standing in his office. They're all talking at the same time. As if there aren't enough people in this segment, Teddy Long calms everybody down and says that Oksana told them that she found a blonde wig in Eve's bag. So it's not even one of the 12 people that are standing there. And then Eve walks up at that point and says, well, she found this in Teddy Long's bag, and it's a blonde wig. She actually put it on his head in a moment that should have been funny, but the whole segment was already such a train wreck that it was kind of lost. It wasn't until the end when Eve said, Teddy, you looked ridiculous in that wig, that I thought, dang, he did look ridiculous. That's kind of funny. But, like, the moment was lost on me because it was just chaos. Everybody's in there screaming at each other. Booker T finally says, ladies, let's go and have coffee and talk about this, talking to Layla and Caitlin. The three of them walk off. Teddy's pulled the wig off at this point, and he says, Eve, you know I had nothing to do with this. She said, well, neither did I. And, Teddy, you look ridiculous in that wig. She stormed off. Teddy slammed the wig down. And we went into commercial with me very confused about what had just happened. Because it was just, obviously they told the story they wanted to tell. I mean, they're moving down the right path, but the Teddy Long with the wig on and then Booker T. Lee, it was chaos. I think most people walked out of that going, what did I just see? More so than, oh yeah, I bet it was Eve. You know what I'm saying? I don't think it accomplished what they wanted to accomplish. Technically, it did. They planted that seed. I just don't think anybody dug deep enough in the dirt for it to stick.
Yeah, if we're really to the point where security camera footage can't tell us whether it was a shorter, older black man with a blonde wig attacking Caitlin, or a taller, Hispanic, attractive woman in a blonde wig attacking Caitlin, we've officially abandoned. We should just leave technology to more advanced races, I guess. I don't know. Honestly, it was extremely stupid. And, they tried to, again, advance multiple stories here. They have the conflict between Teddy Long and Eve, and they have, the Diva storyline with the attack on Caitlin that was, that's still kind of up in the air, and Layla's involvement in that whole deal. So, they just tried to accomplish more than they probably could have in the short time they had with this segment, and it just came across muddled and confusing. And, the one funny thing about it just kind of got lost in the shuffle, and it wasn't apparent how ridiculous Long looked until the segment almost faded to black and went to commercial. So, yeah, it was just too much, in a very short period of time.
Yeah, like I said, it was just, and I'm not stuck down on this one with it doing multiple things, so it's really the story of Eve, whereas, like the show and Kobe, it's two disparate storylines. This is still all around Eve, all about Eve, if you will. It was so much, and like I said, they're not even talking about them. It's Oksana told us, that she said that he said that I said that you said that we said. I just, oh my God, there's too much to sift through. That's especially after the garbage you've been feeding me this whole show. My brain is not plugged in enough for you to start throwing multiple step conspiracy theories at me. I'm not going to get there. After commercials, Sin Cara and Damian Sandow make their entrances for our fifth match of the night. Sin Cara defeating Damian Sandow 3:16. Finish on this comes. You have Sandow on the floor. Sin Cara jumps off the top, gets a seated senton on Cody. He goes to get back in the ring, or everybody kind of goes to get back in the ring, and Cody grabs Sin Cara instead of a disqualification, I guess because he got hit by Sin Cara first. The ref just ejects Cody. When the ref gets back in the ring, Sandow starts arguing with the ref, which allows Sin Cara to recover. Time to recover, he jumps off the top rope and hits a very awkward and very, which I don't think it was his fault, but a very awkward and surprising Hurricanrana with a roll-up. Into a victory, so he beats Damian Sandow. No Rey Mysterio in sight, so I don't think they did a good enough job of making the connection that these three will be three of the four in the tag title tournament final on Monday. It was said, but I just don't think they did a good enough job of putting those two things together. And you end up with a loss for Damian Sandow, a guy that didn't need the loss, a guy that, that you know, needs wins because he's very charismatic. He just needs to be a little more credible in the ring to be a real star. And Sin Cara needed to win, too. So it's kind of one of those, what do you do here? Well, you know, my advice is don't put them together in the ring, especially when you've built this tag tournament and these guys are in the finals for Monday and you don't do a great job of reminding everyone that this is, you know, that this is the matchup on Monday. So I thought a wasted opportunity here, a mistake by Sandow, and a mistake by him in the finish. I don't think he took that Rana just right. It seemed like, I couldn't exactly tell. It looked like, almost like he didn't think he could make the flip, and then it looked like a kid doing a somersault for you, like, Daddy, watch, and put their head down like that and flip over, and then he had to bring his legs up. It did not appear to be Sin Cara's fault for the botch on the end, but nevertheless, just a disappointing segment for me.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't the greatest match. I mean, I don't know if they just don't gel well together, they just had a bad night, or, you know, whatever the heck you could chalk it up to, but I don't know. With Rhodes at ringside, you know, being available for interference and Sin Cara, you know, picking up a clean win, it just kind of sets off the, you know, some lights in your head that say, hey, it seems pretty obvious who's going over on Monday. You know, it kind of tips you off. I don't know. It would make sense to me that Sandow and Rhodes are gonna win this tournament and go on to get the tag title shot, but. Yeah, the segment wasn't anything special. If anything, it just seemed like they tipped their hand on the conclusion for Monday's match. But hopefully, they're able to have a compelling enough match where the finish comes into question multiple times, and we can all be surprised on Monday when somebody picks up a win.
I have faith in well, at least three of those four guys in the ring. Sandow has been very impressive in the ring. I think Cody Rhodes and Rey Mysterio both have established themselves as guys. I mean, Rey with a long history, I think Cody in a short history has established himself as a guy that can go. And Sin Cara has, you know, possibilities. He's in there with guys who can work. So it's, we could have a great match on Monday, and they could easily, like you said, put the finish in doubt a few times to suck you back in. But it did kind of raise the flag of, hey, guys, who do you think is going to win on Monday? Daniel Bryan showing backstage at that point. He's walking backstage. He walks up to Kane and says, I don't care if you even think I might be in trouble out there. You don't come out. And Kane said, don't worry, I won't. Bryan walked off, left Kane standing there into the commercial break. Del Rio makes his finishing his entrance when we came back from the break. Daniel Bryan was out next. Sixth and final match of the night. Alberto Del Rio defeating Daniel Bryan clean in 9 minutes and 47 seconds. Finish on this, like I said, with Bryan locks on the no lock. Del Rio sold it for a month. I couldn't believe how long he just laid there in the ring and really didn't do anything. Then he starts fighting and crawls over to the rope. He gets in the ropes. It did look like Ricardo kind of took a swipe at Bryan in the break, which distracted Bryan. Whatever it was, Del Rio immediately capitalized, wrapped Bryan up in the ropes, and put the arm breaker on him in the ropes. When he finally broke and Bryan staggered away, grabbed him, shoved him into the ring post through the turnbuckle, and then locked on the arm breaker in the middle of the ring for the clean tap-out victory. We talked about this at the top. Anything else you want to add about Bryan losing clean here? Even if when we talk about losing clean but Ricardo, you know, distracted him, there's a difference between, you know, distraction, immediate move, and that's what puts the guy away. This was distraction, then caught up in the ropes, then the shoulder spot, there's just too much time between for it to be considered anything but a clean victory. I think that's how most people are going to look at it, as a clean victory. So, but anything else you want to add about this match?
Not necessarily about the match. I mean, I'm not one that is going to complain about, you know, more clean finishes. I mean, I don't think Bryan is irreparably harmed by, you know, what happened in this match, and I think he'll be fine. And obviously, you know, he looked competitive and you know, seemed to have be pretty close to a win at you know, towards the end where he had the no lock applied. So, I mean, you can make the case that it probably wasn't as bad as it would seem if you just read it on paper, but it was a great match, and I enjoyed both competitors. And like we said earlier, I hope they do end up getting a serious feud at some point, because I think they could do some interesting things together.
Yeah, and again, I mean, obviously they're trying to tell a story with Daniel Bryan being the weak link. So, I mean, it does play into it there, so I guess there is a purpose, but I don't think they did a good enough job of kind of putting that over so that when the match was over and Bryan had tapped out clean, I thought, wow, that was dumb. Whereas if they had done a better job of doing the whole weak link thing and going back through it a couple of times, then I would have gone, oh, you know, that's making a good point here. So I think it's bad storytelling, maybe even on the announcer's part. It just didn't quite get over for me. But we'll see how it plays out. Like, at least you can make a logical jump from how they got, you know, he's the weak link, and then he lost clean to Del Rio. There's at least, you know, a path there, a path of logic there, when often that is not the case for WWE. But just right now, I don't like it all that much. We'll see how it goes. It should, you know, they with the Kane and Daniel Bryan relationship is still very interesting. They've done some crappy stuff with them, but they're still very good in the ring together. They have great chemistry in the ring together, wrestling while bickering. I mean, they really make it work. So there's still, you know, there's still legs on this story. They just have to be careful what they do with it. But speaking of having legs, the Del Rio and Randy Orton story continues. Del Rio grabs a mic, says that Orton was messing with everybody on social media. He said there's no way he's going to be here, and this is why. Video plays from main event from Wednesday night when Big Show knocked out. Randy Orton hits him with a WMD and went on and on about Orton not saying before the match whether he was 100% or not. Del Rio said there's no way Orton's going to be there. He's done. He starts mocking Orton with his poses. He stands there for a minute, looks real serious, flips around and drops down like he's setting up for the RKO. And when he does, guess who's already in the ring in that position? Randy Orton. They're face-to-face. Orton headbutts him, drags him from the ring, beats him up in much the same way that Del Rio beat up Orton 2 weeks ago after SmackDown went off the air. Orton starts tossing him all over the ringside area. At one point, Ricardo Rodriguez jumps on his back to stop him. That allows Del Rio to get away. Orton shrugs off Rodriguez, stares at Del Rio for a moment, and then turns around, hits the RKO on the announce table. No, it is still announce table 540, Randy Orton 0, when it comes to breaking those tables with the RKO. But Ricardo takes that on the announce table. Orton gets in the ring and stares down Del Rio to end the show. Orton's still filming. He is not done filming, so I guess they're going to milk this for as long as they can. They may have a match at the pay-per-view. I don't know. But it looks like this is what they're going to be doing with both guys for the long run.
Yeah, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, they did have some decent matches together. I mean, they're not the most charismatic two guys to put together. They both kind of have a similar monotone delivery on the microphone, so I'm not sure how those interactions will pan out necessarily. But they are both excellent in the ring, and I look forward to seeing what they can do there. I don't know if they're just going to saw some of the legs on those tables before Orton goes out there, make sure he breaks that thing. But Ricardo looked like he took that RKO right in the chin, right on the table, on the announce table. It looked like it would have been more painful than had the thing actually broken and given way for him. But, man, he probably had a sore jaw the next day, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's always hilarious. I mean, when Ricardo was laid out on the table, you and I watch so much wrestling. I think even most fans who don't even watch as much as we do but have been watching for a long time are going, Ricardo's going to take an RKO on that table. I mean, you just know when it's going to happen. And then the next thought that comes out of my head was, is he going to break the table or is it going to be – because that's kind of the thing is Orton didn't look like he took the brunt, but somebody, every time he hits that move on that announce table and it never breaks. I mean, was somebody last year, or maybe it was Christian, maybe, or somebody at some point, he hit two or three in a row and the damn table still wouldn't break?
Yeah, I think it was Christian. I think you're right.
Yeah, I mean, it's just somebody gets hurt. It's either him or the guy he hits the move on. Somebody takes that flush because that table never gives way, and it's becoming the most – it's almost as impressive as The Undertaker's WrestleMania streak. It really is.
Yeah, it's because they both kind of lay out and they spread their weight across the whole table, you know, whereas when other people do, you know, power moves on the table, they kind of both land in the same place, and I don't know, it seems to me like it's just the wrong move to try to put somebody through the announce table.
I think it's like it stretched down the fact that they kind of hit, you know, kind of rolls down. You know, the person taking his knees hit first in their chest and their face and the rest of Orton, you know. So it just kind of ripples, the force ripples across. But yeah, it is, to me, it's the standing joke. If Randy Orton starts heading for the announce table, it's like, no way. No way he breaks this. So, but that is all the time we have. We're not breaking in announce tables either or time records here. We're going to say goodbye. But we thank you guys for listening so much. We're back here next week for another SmackDown audio review. And again, you can get access to all of the recent audio that we've done. Jason Powell, in fact, just interviewed former WWE creative team member Court Bauer. They talked about Brian Gewirtz and the whole creative shakeup and some insight into what's probably going on there from a guy who was there for quite some time. So be sure to check that out. But again, to hear it, you got to be a .NET member. So head on over to ProWrestling.net, and on that right-hand side of the page, click on the .NET member sign-up link, and you can get started listening to all that audio. Jake, anything to add before we get out of here?
No, man, I think we covered it. Have a good rest of the weekend, everybody.
And don't forget, I will be covering, we're putting this up Saturday morning, I will be covering the Ring of Honor iPay-per-view Glory by Honor 11 tonight, and I'll be covering that live, and then Jason Powell and I will be tag-teaming TNA's Bound for Glory this Sunday on pay-per-view. I will be doing the pre-show. Jason will come in and do the actual pay-per-view itself, and then he and I will get together that night for a members-exclusive audio review of the Bound for Glory show. So check out all the wrestling this weekend. Lots of things to cover for you. Thank you guys for listening and your support of the ProWrestling.net for making us the home for your wrestling news. We will be back next week. For Jake, this is Chris Shore saying everybody have a great weekend. Take care.